Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool 3, Nottingham Forest 2. I'm Harriet Pryor hosting this week, and joining me to react to the madness that was Saturday, I have Ian Ryan, Mo Stewart and Neil Jones from Goal alongside me. Ian, I'll come to you first. It was far from convincing, wasn't it? But it does feel quite nice to have two wins on the bounce.
It does feel nice. And I think going into the game, most people were expecting, I wouldn't say a routine win, because Liverpool haven't really given anyone enough confidence throughout the season to think any game's going to be routine. But given what Forest are like on the road, and we know their away record is really poor, I think they've only scored 5 goals before the weekend. And obviously on the back of a 6-1 against Leeds, you're thinking, actually, yeah, this should be a comfortable game, but it doesn't really turn out that way. Actually, you know, it ends up being quite a patchy performance. I think Liverpool first half are dominating, I think it's fair to say, without really penetrating. I think it had all the hallmarks of maybe a game where Liverpool had run out 2-0 winners in the second half, where they'd just grow into it a little bit more, and maybe Forrest had run out of legs a little bit, but it doesn't work out that way. They stay in the game, credit to them. I think their manager gets a performance out of them that maybe many didn't see coming, and it ends up being a day at the office that is probably far trickier than many imagined.
Yeah, Murray in touch on it there, much harder than it should have been, particularly in that first half. The manager called it, he was talking post-match, he said, we made it much more exciting than it should have been. With 86% possession, every Liverpool player completed more than double the number of passes than every Nottingham Forest player. That's from Opta there. It didn't feel like that when you were watching it, did it? Because, as Ian mentioned, they did keep finding ways to get back into the game, and credit to them for that.
It's a weird, weird game all over when you look at different stats like that. And I think Ian was spot on. I think it wasn't so much that we were expecting a comfortable victory. I think it was once we got into the lead, we were expecting to maybe see maybe a bit of Nottingham Forest crumbling like Leeds did, maybe a little bit of Liverpool asserting their dominance the way they did in that game. And that didn't really happen because, well, credit to Forest, both times we scored, they kind of came back almost straight away. So our reaction to our goals wasn't great. Our reaction to their goals was great. But you're right, it didn't really ever feel like we were, like there was a goal any minute now. We had most of the ball, but there wasn't kind of creating constant chances all the way through. And yeah, credit to Forest, they had the game plan, and part of their game plan was letting us have the ball. So in ways, it was like, there was part of our game plan was to be patient, and part of their game plan was to let us have it. So it was almost like everyone was winning up to a point, and then when we scored, it obviously changes. But the mad thing about all of that is that they had this secret weapon up their sleeve of this whole throwing thing. I'm not being crazy here. I don't think they did it until they went behind. They certainly didn't do it when I was watching in the first half. So it's almost like they lulled us into a full sense of security, then went, have some of that, and we couldn't.
Yeah, we'll come on to talk about the long throws and all of the other finer details of how they set up later. But Neil, one thing that I did take from it as a positive was the fact that Liverpool responded well to adversity. And I think there's been plenty of games this season where you've seen Liverpool go behind, or Liverpool not perform particularly well in games, or not be on top in games, and they haven't really been able to pick themselves up. What I did see is a team that went in front twice, then conceded twice, and did still manage to keep on pushing on. And that was a real positive for me from the weekend.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it helps when you're playing against a team that's so terrible at set pieces, isn't it? Defending set pieces. And that you know, Forest come out, I think, with a bit of credit from the game in terms of the reaction. But if you're down at the bottom and you defend the way they do from corners and free kicks, there's nothing down for them. You know, they're gonna get relegated, aren't they? And I think Liverpool, I'd have taken a lot more of that positive if it was Liverpool opening them up and getting to the byline and putting balls across and getting into the scoring positions. But they basically just had to win a corner, didn't they? Or they had to win a free kick, and they'd have half a chance and all three goals coming that way. But that's nice. You know, that's a positive in itself, in the sense that, you know, feels like Liverpool sometimes, even when they were really good, Liverpool, you know, in the last few years, it has felt like sort of they don't half work hard for their goals sometimes and give up some cheap ones. So nice to get some cheap ones, I suppose, isn't it? And you know, none cheaper really than the three that they got at the weekend. It was the second one in particular, I think, was just baffling. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I think it was near Kanate, just sort of marking Kanate. Well, there's a goal going on behind.
I was convinced that it was offside because it was like, clearly they've stopped. Did I miss a whistle or something?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You sort of look over the monitor and it's like, oh no, he's about 6 yards onside. That's going to be fine. Something else must have happened. But yeah, I mean, he'd be tearing his hair out, really, Steve Cooper, wouldn't he? In the sense of, you know, you score twice at Anfield and you haven't scored goals away from home at all this season. And then you let in such cheap goals like that. I think he would be really, really disappointed. I think Liverpool would be a bit disappointed that the way that they've defended the goals. You know, it's strange, isn't it? Sort of, what's the difference between attacking and defending set pieces? Why can you be so dangerous in one box and have such dominance in one box and not have it in the other box? It's strange. And yeah, I mean, you say we're going on top of the long throws. I've never seen anyone take a long throw like that. His back must be in absolute bits today because he didn't even have a run up. Yeah. What was them things where you press the head on the figure and he just launched the ball. He's like a catapult. Yeah. I've never seen it in the women's game
actually, because the goalkeepers are a little bit shorter, so they think if they get the ball in the box, they'll just something will happen. But you don't see it that often in the men's game.
And again, like Mo said, I don't recall it in the first half at all. I didn't know they had him. Like, just in there, and then in the second half, it felt like the whole game was sort of condensed around whether Liverpool could get a corner or they could get a throw-in.
I'll come back to you quickly, because I read your piece after the game, and you spoke about the first half, and you described it as sterile dominance. Yeah, just want to get your thoughts on kind of what was going wrong for Liverpool in that first half, and why they struggled with the low block so much.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't move the ball quickly enough, did they? I think that would be that was certainly the view of the main stand around me. It was sort of just every so often there'd be too many touches. Curtis was probably quite guilty of it, but not the only one by any means. I think they weren't as sharp and as clean with their touches and their link-up play. You know, it was a little bit like that against Leeds, wasn't it? You know, in the first half hour, you forget because of obviously how the game turns out, but I think it wasn't dissimilar to Leeds. There was a lot of the ball, but really, you never really thought they were going to score until he did score at Leeds. And Forrest played, you know, Forrest played five, didn't he, at the back, really, and really sort of had to defend for their lives. They had a physical threat in terms of they had, unlike Leeds, they had an out ball, didn't they, that they could fire up and sort of create a bit of carnage with a one-ye and get people off them. But I agree with you. At half-time, if you'd have said to me that game's going to have five goals in it, I'd have said, oh, wow, that's a good second half for Liverpool. That's going to win 5-0. I would never have said that it would have five goals in it to start, but certainly not two for Forest. So credit to them. But I think Liverpool possibly were thinking, we'll get through the sort of first hour and go and win it 2-0 or 3-0. But yeah, sometimes games just go a bit skew-whiff.
Yeah, Ian, did you feel at halftime and until we scored the goal that maybe things were going the way of when we played Forest back in October and we did lose to them? Or did you feel confident and like Liverpool were in control?
No, I think watching our first half, I agree with what Neil said. You wouldn't look at it and say it's a great performance because it did feel a little bit sterile. But Liverpool were in what seemed total control. I mean, the guys talk about maybe not seeing the throw-in weapon. I mean, Forrest don't see the ball. So it's 86% possession for Liverpool in the first half. So you can't use that or utilise it if you're not getting into those positions. So Liverpool, it was complete domination, but it was a case of them moving it a little bit too slow. I think you have to give sometimes the opposition credit. We can always come in and look at what our own team's doing, but you are up against another 11 players. You've got a game plan as well, and they're not going to make it easy. Although they have at times this season for the opposition on the road, but they are fighting for their lives now. And I think you're at the stage of the season now where you are going to see one or two freak results. I mean, you see what goes on at the Emirates on the Friday night, which is just absolute carnage and chaos, isn't it? It's a brilliant game of football, but it just shows you that given the right stage and the right environments and the right circumstances, some of these teams who are down the bottom can cause some of these teams who are a little bit closer to the top problems, and pressure plays a part, certainly in the case of Arsenal and Southampton. And we know Liverpool have just been a bit of a basket case all season, for want of a better word. They've just been all over the show. So I think what I always keep coming back to is you never quite know what this Liverpool team's going to give you on a week-to-week basis or a game-to-game basis. And you get lulled in a little bit to a false sense of security because there's those outliers like the 7-0s and the 9-0s and the 6-1s, and you think they've turned the corner. And to be fair, when they've had, I think, decent results in them games at home, they've tended to go and put the opposition away again and get a positive result. That's not always been the case when we've gone away from home, Bournemouth being an example. And I think we'll come on to it, I'm sure, later, but you know, West Ham will be a very different test again, but there'll be a physical threat there like there was at the weekend. And I think, you know, Konaté will have been in lots of different types of football matches with lots of different types of threat, and he'll have been up against players with far more ability and far more quality than Awoniyi. But my God, that was a problem for him in terms of physicality. And he's a specimen, Konaté, isn't he? You look at him and think, no one's really going to ever cause him a physical problem. And you've seen him come up against all kinds of forwards, and he deals with most of them really well. But that was a difficult game for him in terms of just being pushed around a lot. And I don't think Awoniyi's the most talented footballer that's ever kind of graced Anfield. But in terms of a presence, he did cause us a problem.
Just backing into him, basically, every single time.
It was amazing. Like, where I was sitting, I had a really close-up view of it, especially in the second half, because it was happening right in front of me. And basically, it was like a wrestling match where you then have to jump in the air. And it was like one every 2 minutes. It wasn't even just the fact that it was having to do it. It was the volume in which they was having to do it. And yeah, he would have come up against physical guys before, and he would back himself to win the most of them. And I think if you look at percentage-wise what he won, he probably still won around the same as he normally did. But again, because of the volume, it means that he actually lost more, and that's why it was a bit more noticeable. And Awoniyi, I think, obviously, he was going to be fired up coming back to Anfield. He never really got, well, he literally never got a chance for Liverpool. And that was the first time he got to start at Anfield, and he wanted to make the most of it. And I think for their first goal, the touch he plays, he holds off Konaté, plays the little first-time ball in, and it takes out him and Fabinho, and that's pretty much where all the problems begin. So I want to give him some credit in there. But the thing that, for me, I noticed about that, two things. One, Konaté is always going to be the front-foot guy. He's always going to want to take on that challenge. And he's going to come up against strikers who are going to use that strength of his against him, who are going to try to make him go too heavy and maybe be a bit more streetwise about things. And the other thing is that when he's in those battles, the rest of us were standing around far, far too often. So if he does win it, they're not ready to react. If he doesn't win it, they're not ready to react. Mm-hmm. And the times when he didn't win it, the problems came from the next phase of play. It wasn't so much that he didn't win it, it was that we didn't react to it. And I think that's probably what's going to be being preached by Klopp and the coaches over the course of the next couple of days ahead of West Ham.
Yeah, I'll come back to you quickly on that, because I want to talk about the way that Forrest kind of set up, and he was obviously their out ball, and Konaté did struggle with that. But I think a bit of that also wasn't helped by the fact that they basically put two men man-marking Trent and Fabinho in the middle, both, and then both the 10s in front of them as well. So it kind of changed Trent's role a little bit, and we'll come on to him a bit later as well. But Konaté was kind of having to work out where to cover and what positions he was going to be in because Trent was being man-marked, and maybe that led into the struggles a bit as well.
I think so. And I mean, they're obviously all still new to this. So every time an opponent does something,
yeah, Van Dijk said that post game. Yeah. It's like we're all figuring this out as well. This is a work in progress. We're enjoying it, but it doesn't mean that it's particularly easy.
No, and it also means that opponent coaches are only just seeing us doing it, and they're only working out ways to combat it. And one of those is going to be man-marking Trent. I very much expect to see Moyes pull the same thing, by the way. And then that causes, like you say, problems for the guys behind him, because they're not sure which kind of spaces they want to cover. Because part of this deal with Trent moving infield is that Konaté has the ability and the speed to cover a large amount of the pitch. But he also wants to kind of come out with the ball. And you see that. And there's times where you could sense that Liverpool players didn't want to run into a trap. And I think that particularly with Robertson, because they gave him lots of space on this side. And there were times where you were screaming at him to just run at them. But I don't know if he's conscious of the way the goal at the Etihad, where he overruns it and they get him behind him. But he was kind of getting to a point and then stopping and then turning back in the first half. It was only really late on that he started really running at them. And I think Liverpool were conscious of what Forest were trying to do. Like Ian said, when you've got a team that are in that low block, they're not coming at you. They're kind of protecting spaces. The game naturally slows down. So then you get into a situation where we're trying to pick passes, and people didn't necessarily have the faith in their ability to pass through lines in tight spaces. So consequently, we go back, we try and find it. Luckily, we had the set pieces to kind of give us some real attacking impetus at the time. But it's something that was going to be a work in progress. I wonder whether Thiago coming into it is going to be a key to unlocking it. Because then if you've got two passes there, then it's a lot harder for them to kind of shut them down.
Yeah, Neil, it's been a problem all season. As Mo mentioned, the fact that they don't seem to want to push forward as much. They're being a bit more conservative in how they play. They pass backward a lot rather than being progressive. Do you think a lot of that stems from a bit of a lack of confidence this season, or is it a stylistic thing?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly having a little less searing pace on the pitch as well to do that, to change the pace of the game. You know, they've got a lot of players who want to come to feet, haven't they, and take the ball that way. I thought the Trent thing was interesting. It felt like Klopp had sort of backed himself into a corner and sort of had to play that system after the way the Leeds game had gone. I think if you took that in isolation, there's no way he would play that system, because Forrest don't play a left winger. So you would think the idea would be your fullbacks would get absolute acres, wouldn't he, and have that. Forrest do play sort of two number 10s, don't they, that play in that position, so you would think it'd be quite crowded in there. So I thought it was crazy the last 15 minutes that they were carrying on with that system, because there was times when Canate had the ball and had no one to pass to, and you felt like if he lost it in that position, it was game over. And I think that you see the teething difficulties. I was quite held back on that after the Leeds game. I don't see that as a sort of a that's the blueprint for the future. I think it's for certain games and for certain opposition, but you see the teething problems with it, because as good as Trent was on the ball and as good as, you know, some of the passes he played, there was one he played with the outside of his foot where he looked the other way and just put it into Salah's path in the first half, which was, it's great. And obviously his deliveries were great from set pieces. There was still a lot of times in the game where it just looked weird. It looked weird what Liverpool were doing. It sort of looked like, yeah, that, you know, it would have made more sense really to not maybe play either Jordan or Curtis and how just have a right back also on the pitch that could do it, and especially against the 1 year of Joe Gomez, I imagine would have been quite useful to have sort of helping out in the second half. But they won. They got through it. Obviously, they got the job done. I still think, I mean, West Ham again is a test up. It's probably a similar test to Forest, but with better players, isn't it? In that sense that, you know, I heard Gary O'Neill talk, and obviously on Sunday they slapped Bournemouth around, didn't they? And he said it was basically they got the ball in the box. He said they were better in both boxes, and that should have Liverpool's ears pricked, because that's what's going to happen, isn't it? They're going to have Antonio, they're going to have Thomas Suchek and players like that getting into the penalty area. They're going to have Bowen and Cresswell and whoever delivering balls in, and Liverpool are going to have to be a little bit more compact, a little bit more structured than they were on Saturday.
The teething problems came on the left as well, though, didn't they? You mentioned there Trent and Canate, but Robertson and Curtis. There was a lot of times where Robertson was literally pointing, being like, why were you not there? Please, can you go there? You could see that they're still figuring it out on that side as well.
Yeah, and Gakpo as well, you throw into that. I mean, I suppose it's the hidden, not the hidden cost, but the one that no one really spoke about with Sadio Mane going, I think, isn't it? Is that link up with Robertson was just, it was second nature, and whether it was Wijnaldum or Milner or whoever on that left, it was just so easy. It felt like so easy. Obviously, I'm guessing a lot of work went into it, but they knew where to be, didn't they? And we've seen the odd moment this season, you know, I think of the United game with Gakpo, where Robertson and him linked up really well for the first goal in particular. Curtis is a bit different, isn't he? I think he's naturally, he wants to be deep, doesn't he? He wants to come and get the ball. He doesn't necessarily want to be marooned out on that left wing and in that space. But obviously, the flip side of that, I suppose, is you saw a little bit in the second half with Diaz coming on. Straight away, you saw that there was a little bit of a change of emphasis on Liverpool, and they could carry the ball down that side as opposed to sort of just doing those into feed out, back out the other side. There was a little bit more threat and a little bit more sort of cohesion down there. So, yeah, I thought Robertson was decent, to be fair. I thought he had a decent game all around. I think he's been decent, actually, recently. But, yeah, they still haven't found that sort of perfect balance. I actually don't know who it is, because I don't see it when Thiago's there either. Sometimes I don't see that sort of natural way. I think Robertson's sort of almost been had his wings clipped a little bit by Liverpool's personnel, but maybe Diaz coming back in can just you know, give him a little bit more simplicity. He just gives him the ball and lets Diaz run with it.
Yeah, we do get the goals 90 seconds after half-time, Ian. How do you think that changed the trajectory of the second half and opened things up, I guess, for both teams?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you'd want to say it settles them down, but obviously Forrest do respond quite quickly, but it should have settled them down. And I think it's a good goal from a Diogo Jota point of view, because it's exactly the kind of goal you want to see him get, I think. And I think there's been a lot of chat about Jota I've understood some of it because there's been this period of the time where he has scored, and there's also been a period of the time where I think you can tell he's trying to work his way back into a bit of form, and I think the manager has been understanding and respectful of that, which is why you've still seen him play games when you've thought maybe, oh, could he take Jota off here, or could he maybe not play him? But I think they've been really conscious about trying to get him back to a level again. And let's have it right, you know, Diogo Jota on form is a massive asset to this football club. And I think it's been forgotten about a little bit with some of the chatter around, oh, well, if a bid comes in, would you consider selling Jota? And it's like, well, you know what, having lads around who can pick up goals like Jota does, I like the second one, but I really love the first one because of where he is. And just being in that space where you're picking up the bits and pieces, that is a real commodity, I think. And I think having someone around the team who can do that on a regular basis when they're at their absolute best, and he can do that, he's proven that. And I know he can be a little bit of a streaky footballer, but lots of forwards can be streaky as well. But you play them when they're in form, and you play them when they're in that kind of, when they're in that streak, if you like. And I think his performance was another reminder of, if you've got him at your disposal, then he's a real asset, because, as I say, he does provide those clinical goals, those big moments when it is tight. And I think if you're entering a stage of the season now where games could be decided by just someone being alive in the box. And I think he often gets, or he did get the comparison to Fowler at times. And whilst very few are worthy of having comparison to Robbie, because he was genuinely one of the best finishers I've ever seen play for the club, so natural in everything he did, you can see glimpses of why the comparison is made, because Jota does come alive in the 6-yard box, or he does come alive in the 18-yard box. I always feel a little bit sorry for him where he gets used out wide sometimes, and I think he can do it to a point, but I don't think it necessarily suits his physical attributes, because he's not big. So I think he can get roughed about a little bit, and he's not pacey in terms of, you'll get past the man and he's away from you and you can't catch him. He's none of those things really. But what he is, he's really smart. He's really cute. He's really clever. And he's good in moments where he almost kind of sniffs it, where it's going to drop the ball, mm-hmm. and he knows where to be. And that's a big, big asset that for a football club. And I think, you know, we should be grateful we've got him. I understood some of the narrative because he was looking a little bit rusty, but it was another reminder that he's such a key player to have around the team.
He starts him ahead of Nunes as well, doesn't he? Mm,
I think so. And I think quietly, since he came back from his latest injury around the Real Madrid game, Nunes has, well, not been at the peak. He has been at his best so far for Liverpool. So he's kind of struggled. He's been a bit in and out. I don't know whether he's still shaking off that injury and that's why he's only getting bit parts at the moment. But whatever the reason is, I mean, maybe he does really need to learn more English, I don't know. Whatever the reason is, at the moment, like you say, Jota's got the hot hand and he's getting in there. I think the thing, you hit a nail on the head there, Ian, when he talked about him being a sniffer. And that's the thing that I think has changed. The confidence is back. And if there's been any evidence of confidence being important in football, it's been Jota. Not only the last year, but the last two games. As soon as that first one went in, and it's not just about the goals, it's about his decision-making. He is sharper now. Like, the first goal, I've watched it back this morning. He's on the move. He's the only one on the move. And he's moving before Fabinho's headed the ball. So he's saying, if Fabinho doesn't score, I'm going to make sure this goes in. And again, with the second one, it looks like he's in miles of space, because he's thinking, these guys aren't set. I'm going to come into this space. This guy's got his back to me. He's not going to see me. And just being there, having the presence of mind to be able to execute all of those things. Before, he was trying to trip in over himself, trying to get into the right position, trying to be too cute, too precise. Now it's just coming naturally for him. And as Ian says, that's a massive asset at this stage in the season. If he can be the one to kind of nick a goal. And we've seen what we're like most of the time once we get a lead, particularly a 2-0 lead. So if we've got someone who can particularly break through, settle the team down, then we can start playing differently. And then we can start playing our football. In this last run, that could be absolutely vital. And it's weird with Jota, because I keep trying to think with him, like, in the future, in the best case scenario for him, where is he going to fit? Is he going to be a play every week kind of guy? I'm not 100% sure he's ever really going to be a this guy plays every week kind of guy. It might be that he is streaky, and then when he's in his streak, he's in the team. But then when he's not, he's out, but he's still able to come in and contribute. And that's the kind of guy you need. Like, people say, oh, well, you'd get an offer for him, you might consider it. I think we're always going to need him, whether we have him in the first team or whether you have him from the bench.
I thought Klopp said Klopp explained it really with one quote, didn't he, on Friday. He said, the ticket into this team is what you do off the ball. And I think that explains the Jota over Nunes, I think. And not in terms of work rate, but in terms of smartness and cuteness off the ball. I think Nunes is wholehearted and will chase down a fullback and will make the sort of the one that gets everyone going brilliant, you know, the slide tackle that concedes a corner. But Jota's a lot more cute in terms of knocking a defender off balance, being open to receive the ball, being alive in the penalty area. And I think where I would compare him to Fowler, even though Fowler was such a great technical finisher, Fowler didn't care how the ball went in, you know, whether if he scuffs it, if it's a tap in, if it's a toe poke, if it's a, you know, a downward header, whatever it is. Jota's got that in him, hasn't he? If you look at the four goals, he's got a lovely classic sort of side foot finish. He's got a shinner in off the post, but, you know, well directed in off the post. He's got a goal on the goal line, and then he's got three touches in the penalty area and a lovely finish on his left. I think Liverpool put a stat out, didn't they, where it was his Premier League goals, and there's not a lot in between head, right foot, left foot, and that really does mark him out. You know, you think of other strikers or forwards that Liverpool have got, you sort of know what their goals are going to be, don't you? You know Salah gets a lot of goals, but you know Salah's favourite one, you know Nunez's favourite one. It's usually a volley or a header. He doesn't seem to like the ball on the floor for the finish. You know Diaz is obviously going to be cutting in off the left and going for that. Jota's just got, you don't really know what type, you know, if you said 1-0 Jota, you wouldn't know what type of goal it was, would you? Or you know, you wouldn't know sort of where he'd like the ball if you were playing it. And I think that does add something, as well as the pressing from the front and the sort of keeping the forward line connected. I think he does it pretty well and at his best anyway, and having him back in form is massive, definitely, for Liverpool.
The variety thing is definitely key, isn't it? And it often gets referenced because obviously he's not the tallest, but his ability to get up and score with headers, I mean, that's just testament to his movements and his cleverness in and around the box as well. But also the kind of the streaky thing, I always find interesting, because I think if you listen to Wolves fans, they'd often reference the fact that he'd maybe get, you know, 6 and 8 and may not score again. But there's loads of footballers like that, and it can be a really useful asset, because I used to look at my United teams and they'd just bring Berbatov in from nowhere and he'd score. And don't get me wrong, they're very different types of footballers, but he'd get 10 and 12 and then maybe go on a bit of a kind of dry run. But that's hugely important, that, to have the ability to bring someone in at times. And he might not always start for Liverpool, because I think there are games where you might say, well, maybe could you go with Nunes through the middle and stuff. But to have the ability to maybe go on those runs where it is 12 and 15 or 10 and 12 or whatever it may be, they can be absolutely critical and crucial. So, yeah, a good reminder at the weekend of what a footballer Liverpool have still got on their hands.
Yeah, definitely. And another reminder at the weekend as well of Mo Salah and his brilliance. Mo, I feel like every time he plays at the moment, he's breaking another record. And he goes, I think, sixth on the list now, joint with Robbie Fowler for goals for Liverpool. I mean, he is just incredible, isn't he? And every time, kind of, even amidst this season where people have been critical of Liverpool's form and of certain individuals, he is the one that you can rely on. Even when his performances aren't incredible, he pops up with the goals.
And to be fair, I was critical of him earlier this season. I think there was times when we were all struggling. And I think what I was saying was that when you're that good, sometimes you've got to put the team on your back and just say, I'll dig you out. And to be fair to him, he has done that in the past. But look, here we are again, and it looks like he's going to get another 30-goal season, and I'm just going to have to shut up because I should stop.
Do you think another 30-goal season on the cards?
I do. I mean, I think we've got, what, 7 games left?
Yeah.
And
he's on 27.
27, yeah. So I think he's going to get 3 goals. I'm not sure if anybody's going to be penalties.
Three takes him level with Gerrard as well, doesn't it? If he gets another 3, that takes him joint 5th.
And there's something I love about the fact that he is not being humble about these records. He's hunting these records like they're deer. I love it. And so often people are like, oh, I don't mind, as long as the team wins. Like, nah, because he knows how important that is to the team winning. It's not an either-or scenario. And I do think when it comes to the crunch at the end of the season, it's often when we see him go on a little run. And with a couple of those records still to tick off, and obviously the big hunt for Europe, which is still on and will still be on within that dressing room, I think this is a perfect time for him to come out and just be like, here I am, still here, still scoring the goals. And even with Ian's point about Diogo Jota, the reason why it's a lot easier to be able to have a guy who can maybe come in and do 10 and 12 but then not score for a while is because he's not the main guy you're asking to get goals. We've got this other fella who's getting 30 goals a season. That's really, really important.
Yeah, definitely. And I am going to just touch on before we go to the bit of, from the post-match point about goals we did concede, Ian, because the first one comes from a long throw and then it's basically, you know, Nico Williams and it takes a big deflection. The second one stems actually from Alisson kicking the ball out, miskicking it, and then it coming from there as well. It just speaks to the sloppiness that there still is in Liverpool's defensive game at the moment. And there's so many things that we can point to in games this season where you're like, oh, that's such an atypical thing. And you can't plan for that. But at the moment, you're having to plan for that because so many of these defensive mistakes are creeping into the games.
Yeah, yeah. It was disappointing to see how the goals went in. I think, you know, you could pick holes in both of them, to be honest. They're both poor goals to concede. I think, you know, the second one, it is a bit sloppy from the goalkeeper. Listen, he's been the best player in the squad by a distance, it's fair to say. But I think now and again, he does have that in him, Alisson, where he probably does maybe one or two too many a season, where he puts you under unnecessary pressure. But because he is so good, you allow it and you forgive it and stuff, because he's been fantastic throughout the season. You do worry where we'd be if it wasn't for him this season. And then it's not great from there, is it? I think Virgil gets the header, doesn't he? And it just lands in a place where you'd expect to have someone, being honest. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much on the penalty spot. There's this weird thing with Henderson and Nunes before that goal where it looks like Henderson's telling him to go somewhere outside the box, doesn't really move, and then Henderson doesn't really cover the space either. So it looked a little bit of a mess, but and don't get me wrong, you know, Gibbs White takes the finish really well. And I think that one deflects as well, doesn't it? So it's two deflections there for both goals. So I suppose if you want to try and spin it a little bit, you can say, well, it's hard lines to an extent.
But it's been hard lines so many times, isn't it, this season? That's the
but
thing.
You're giving them the opportunity and you are going to get punished. And Liverpool have been punished more often than not for silliness and sloppiness. And it's been a bit of a reoccurring theme. And I think that is something the manager's going to have to get a grip of. At the end of the day, we are in the space now, I said it before, where it results is the be-all and end-all. Mm. If you are going to get top four, it's all about just getting over the line, and by hook or by crook, you get there. And, you know, if there are errors, it's how you react. And I think the point was made before, this Liverpool team a month ago probably to an extent crumbles and ends up walking away with a point. And it could have been on a different day. You know, mm-hmm. Awoniyi has that chance, doesn't he, where I think he overhead kicks it. And
Johnson,
and I'm surprised he didn't start, to be honest. When they have caught Forrest this season, he's looked the obvious threat.
I was really surprised he wasn't
because
playing,
he goes past players with ease. And I think, again, he's a little bit streaky. Doesn't always kind of, you know, hit the kind of levels you want him to hit as a Forrest fan, but he is an important player for them. But yeah, there's those chances at the end where Liverpool could have wilted, but they managed to stick in there and stay in there, and that's a good sign given what's gone on this season. And you're hoping that maybe one or two are finding themselves again, but there's no doubt about it. There are still those instances and those moments where you're looking at them and thinking, I expect more from certain footballers. We might come on to Virgil and stuff, but I thought at times he just didn't quite look at the level that we've seen him at the past. And some of this can sound harsh at times because I don't always think it's one particular person. I think Liverpool as a unit, systematically, that they're letting each other down at times, and you can pick holes in the system. But I think there are individuals where you've come to expect a certain level and fallen below that. And even if they've fallen below it by a couple of percent, it's really noticeable. Mm. You know, I now look at teams and I think they're not afraid to go Virgil anymore. There was this aura, wasn't there, where no one even went down his side. So never mind, no one ever beat him. No one would even attempt to. I don't think that's quite there now. I think teams look at him and thinking, he's a little bit more back foot than he used to be. And therefore, we can have a pop at this guy now. We can have a go. And don't get me wrong, he's still a very, very good centre-half. And I think some of the chatter around, you know, this centre-half versus Virgil and stuff, it's been nonsense, a lot of it. You know, he has transformed this Liverpool team. Him and Alisson came in and they were transformative in terms of signings. You will not see, really, other examples where one or two individuals have come in and lifted a team as much as those lads did. But in the case of Virgil, I think he'll probably look at his own performances this season. I think he has done. I think he said, you know, one or two is a below our best. And I think, you know, you hope to see him back to his best next season, and there's every chance you do see him get back to those levels. Maybe not quite where he was two or three years ago, but I still think there's room for improvement with him.
I think part of the problem is that, like you say, because he was so dominant previously, when he drops his level, it has so much more of an effect, because he was so many other people were relying on him, because he was, like you say, he was able to have that aura and able to do things that almost cover two players at once. The first goal, I was sitting like right in front of it happened, and literally 10 seconds before they throw it in, Virgil shouts, "Concentrate, to everybody. Literally, concentrate, tapping his head, watching everybody. The next thing that happens is that Fabinho gets caught under the ball. And then, as I say, Awoniyi makes a really good pass.
You mic'd him up, Mo?
No, the reason it really rung in my head because when he said it, I was thinking exactly the same things. Yeah. Like, yes, please, concentrate. We've just scored a goal. We've just got in the lead. Let's everyone calm down. And then literally, just watching it right in front of me, I was just like, that's not concentrating, guys. And to be partly fair to Virgil, there's in a situation where at one point, there's two of them right in front of him. And he's not sure which one's going to get the ball. He goes to the left, which gives White all of the time and space to get his head up and see Nico. Nico, who's outrun about five Liverpool players to get there, by the way. And those are the things, it's like, well, you can understand how that happened, but then obviously the sloppiness around getting them out there, the sloppiness around not getting back in place once the break has happened. And just game management in general, like, I get the way we play. I get that we are supposed to be good on the ball, to draw teams in, to give us space to play around them. I get that. What we need to understand, when we are not at our best, as, I mean, we're a long way into the season now, so I think everyone should know that we're not at our best. There are times when you just have to say, we're just going to, for 5 minutes, keep the ball as far away from our goal as possible. And we never do that. We never do that. I think maybe having an out ball in the same way that Forrest had Awoniyi is going to be the answer. So whether it's Diaz with his pace, whether it's Nunez winning headers, or what it is, that's going to be the key to it. But we did some dumb shit on Saturday. We really did. And it was like, if I had any hair, I probably would have been pulling it out. And I did feel for both managers. I imagine the both of them would have had a little chat afterwards just saying, the fuck was that all about? But yeah, I mean, going forwards, these are the things that you really need to tighten up, because so much of what we did was positive, but I do think that those potential negative things can still derail things.
Yeah, and for more on the madness of the game on Saturday, here is a clip from the post-match point.
I agree with you, by the way, in terms of, like, it's a worry that we're conceding goals, and also the Van Dijk thing. I feel like, you know, he hasn't been the Van Dijk we know of late. I feel like, like, this is part of the process. We are 100% in transition now. There's no denying it. We're in transition. And I feel like, you know, when you get to a point where you've got a team that is completely solid, you're going for the lead, like, 1% means that you're not going to win the game. Like, there's no room for error. I feel like now we're at a point where the game's mad again. It's like, you score one, we'll score two. You score three, we'll score four. And that's where we are. And that's why you're seeing gaps like that.
But I feel back in January, back in February, as I said, to start the thing off with Stu, Sean, I'm pleased about that. About 2 months ago, I remember saying to someone, remember the 5-4 at Norwich?
Yeah.
We wouldn't be involved in that game now.
Yeah.
Whereas I do feel that's the thing that's changed now. I could say, looking at it today, at one point, I thought we're going to win this 5-3. And I feel like we're in the mad ones now a little bit. And I think that's a positive, not a negative, if you see what I mean.
I completely agree with you, and it is a positive. And that's why, you know, despite what I was saying about Jones and stuff before, I'm glad that he picked that team, because he's going right, we need to build from this point, and we're building from this point onwards, and this point being, you know, Leeds or Arsenal, whatever it is, we're building forwards and we're picking the same lads and we're playing in a way now, as you say, where you can see us winning games like 5-3, we can see us winning a mad game where, you know, going back 2 months, you couldn't even see us winning 1-0. Like, it's like we're at a point now where actually, you know, and it's good that he's playing these lads where you go, okay, we'll do what we do first half, but actually on the bench we've got Diaz, Nunez and Thiago. And that's like, what a sandwich to bring on that is, you know what I mean?
All right then.
Yeah, nice one to Neil, Sean and Stu for that. And if you want to listen to the whole show, you can, of course, download the Anfield Wrap app and you can get some free tokens to watch it, or subscribe if you want to join us. We're working very hard, as we always do, to put out lots of lovely content for the final stage of the season. You can also join on YouTube and get all the video content on there as well. Neil, I want to touch on Trent because it's another game where we get to see him in this role. I watched Match of the Day and they called it inverted floating fullback. And I was like, no, I can't start dealing with things like this. No. I can't talk about inverted floating fullbacks on the main show. But it is another game where you see how it might transpire if he does kind of stick to this plan, this system. It's an interesting one because there is the stat floating about that he's got more assists in the last three Premier League games than his previous 38 matches in the competition. What do you make of how it's transformed him as an individual, and do you think it will stick this way?
Yeah, I mean, the assist one, I think, is a little bit of a red herring. I don't think he was not creating chances, you know, when he wasn't getting assists necessarily. I think he was always, he always puts in five or six good corners and free kicks in a game, doesn't he, really, where you look and think, ah, oh, someone's on the end of that, or someone's missed a chance or whatever. So I'm not an assist sort of fan, if you want to call it that. It's more about what, you know, you can tell when someone's creating from where they're meant to be creating. It's not really down to them to finish everything off. I think there's a lot of things to iron out with him playing in that position. I think it works lovely in certain games. I think it still needs a lot of work around it. I think obviously you have to have certain players on the pitch, I think, for it to work as well. And Konaté being a big one of those. I think Jordan Henderson's another massive one of those, just for knowing where to stand, you know, when Liverpool haven't got the ball and making those sacrificing runs. He made one, I don't know whether it was Trent, he made one, and I don't know if Mo had him mic'd up, but I think if you literally just made me run 50 yards and not give me the ball, like, you absolutely, like, you can see him sort of running back to sort of right back. I mean, I think what it's done for him, I think it has lit something under him in terms of his desire for the game a little bit. And I'm not saying he wasn't trying, or he wasn't sort of, he didn't have desire, but I think he was maybe a little bit down on himself, maybe a little bit, maybe even the opposite of that. Maybe he was almost like so determined to prove people wrong that he was maybe getting a little bit more casual with his game, you know, determined to show that everything was under control. I think Virgil sometimes does that a little bit, where you think rather than sharpening them up, they almost go the other way and go more laid back with the performance. I think what this has done is it's actually got him really proactive, and he really, you know, he's wanting the ball. You can see him, even some of his tackling's a little bit more sort of determined and that kind of thing. So that's definitely a positive. It's woken him up. I think tactics wise, I still think there's loads for Liverpool to iron out with him in midfield, especially if you consider they haven't got their first choice midfield on the pitch, really, have they? I mean, I think Thiago is in that first choice midfield. They haven't got him on the pitch, really. I mean, he'd be lucky to start on Wednesday, given the cameo he produced when he came on. I mean, he was on something. I think there was something missed with Thiago when he came on. He certainly didn't look like he was switched on to what Liverpool needed at that point. But when he plays with Trent in there, there's a lot of possibilities, but there's also a lot of things where you think, okay, how's that going to work? Who's, you know, you can't have two balls on the pitch. Who's going to be dictating the tempo? Who's going to be in the right position off the ball? But yeah, potential, but also I think problems as well in terms of to solve for Liverpool with him in there. And I think against a better side than Forest, I think, you know, a side that had a left winger, you know, if you think about if they were playing against Brighton, for example, it would have been carnage. I think Liverpool, that would have been carnage. So I don't think Liverpool can play it against every opposition.
I think it'll be selective, Ian, when the manager decides to go for it or not. It also does rely on Trent as well, doesn't it, really? If you take him out, you can't really play the same system.
No, I think it will be selective. I think the manager said that. I think he's already kind of said, you know, it's not going to be something we do every single game. I would like to see it with a right back, a proper right back in there. I say proper right back, there's not loads of them at the club, unfortunately, but a lad you've seen play there before, so maybe it is a Joe Gomez, because Trent's still going to have this thing where he's got to get back in at times. And I think it's difficult, that, having to play midfield but also have an eye on what's going on behind you and then getting back in. And I know there are lads there who can cover for him, but I think, you know, Neil's right, there will be times where you get exposed. And Liverpool are fine with playing a bit of a high wire act, aren't they? You know, they've done it for a long time now. You know, how often was the high line criticised, even when Liverpool were at the very best? Mm-hmm. It was something that they wanted to do. It was something the manager wanted to do, because they wanted to be further up the pitch and obviously condense it and make it difficult for opponents to get out. But when you do get out, it can look a little bit like you've been exposed and stuff. And I think that this manager is one who will take risks. He's fine with that to an extent. But I would like to see it with a fullback and allow Trent just the ability to play that midfield role as he'd probably want to play it himself, or as he's played it maybe when he was a bit younger. I think I like the point around it's reinvigorated him, and that you can see that. I think if you sat Trent down, I think he'd probably say that he maybe feels it's now is a good time to maybe evolve and start to play midfield. He's done everything you can possibly do at right back in terms of the honours and the medals he's won. I do think there have been times this season where he's been way below what I'd expect, if I'm being honest, defensively. I think that's okay to say. I think we can have that honest conversation where he's not quite been at it defensively. And I think if he was honest enough, I'm sure he would say it himself, at times he's not been at that level. And some of it, I think, is system related. I think he's maybe been left hung out to dry at times in terms of the system. And I think that's where you've maybe seen him get a bit frustrated. But there are genuine times, I still don't know the shows, where he probably could do a little bit more when he's been a fullback, just to get back in and show that appetite and desire. But I think sometimes when you're frustrated and you're feeling a little bit down on yourself, it can easily unravel and it can look like you're maybe not putting it in when you are, but it's, you know, it's just kind of got to the point where it's not working for you. But I just think because of his ability on the ball, he's almost, you wouldn't say he's wasted it right back because of all the stats he's got and all the assists he's got. And no, let's be honest, the assist he gets at the weekend he got from right back, because it's a set piece, so he gets that anyway. But I just think it almost feels now, and you do get a real glimpse of it at Leeds, and you've got to caveat it to a point because of the opposition, and they're quite poor and they're giving them loads of space. But I think if you are a Darwin Núñez or a Jota, for example, and you've suddenly got this fella who can operate slightly further forward and he's in midfield, then you are rubbing your hands together, you are licking your lips, because if there's anyone who's going to be able to find you from 30, 40 yards away, it is Trent Alexander-Arnold. He is that good. And we can talk about midfielders potentially coming to this football club, and we're all a little bit disappointed that it's not going to be Bellingham by the looks of it. Obviously others will come in, but he is that talented, Trent, that if you can get him operating in that midfield role, then it could solve a multitude of problems for Liverpool. It really could, because he is on the ball. He has got very few peers, I think. He's that good. He is that good. And, you know, the Kevin De Bruyne thing used to get referenced a lot by Carragher and stuff because of his delivery. His delivery is, it's at that level. Mm-hmm. It's at that level. You know, Gary Lineker, who is, you know, a centre forward, who has got countless goals and knows what it's like to score a goal. How often would he talk about Trent's delivery? He bang on about it all the time, and he knows a good cross, by the way. He used to be on the end of John Barnes and Chris Waddle's balls enough times to know what a good delivery looks like. He is elite, Trent, on the ball, he is. And he has got one or two weaknesses off the ball. I think we all understand and recognise that. I will always bang on about the fact that he gets far more attention than other players when it comes to mistakes. It is ridiculous. And, you know, there's been real examples of Reece James recently, who I think is a good footballer, by the way, getting exposed, and I've seen fuck all. I've seen nothing written about it or spoken about it, and I've not seen any big let's have an half an hour chat about it on any show or anything like that. The way Trent gets that kind of that spotlight, it doesn't seem to happen for other footballers for some reason. But I just think let's get the best out of him. And at the minute, for me, the best out of him is when he's on the football. And if you can get him in and around the opposition's box, then it's a massive tick in the box for me. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up, whether Liverpool will maybe trial it as a, you know, will he let him go a bit more forward in the number eight position and see how that plays out? You know, will he get enough space to make that work? It's an interesting one, but I'm happy to try and persevere with Trent in midfield, but I do think it needs maybe looking at with a fullback coming in just to give him a bit of support and balance.
By the way, a penny for Nico Williams' thoughts. I mean, now we're all dying. It's like, oh yeah, we only need another right back behind him. And he's just like, guys, why were you not doing this last year?
He played well, didn't he, Nico?
He did.
He had a good game. Like, I was made up for him. I was in the mix zone. You saw a lot of people stopping him, obviously, for a chat. There's a great clip of Jürgen, I think, isn't there? Sort of saying, I'm not shaking your hand. I think he says, doesn't he? But I do like seeing that, you know. Whatever you make of this, sort of not celebrating, he must have been absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
He did do a bit of celebrating.
Like, I mean,
he held his hand.
Oh,
up,
did he?
He held it, and then he got it.
I think he saluted the Forest fans.
Yeah.
So I think he was like, yeah.
He'd done it right, I suppose. Yeah. He didn't do the John
Joe Shelby. I would not care if he celebrated. Like, it wasn't like he was a legend for Liverpool.
No,
he could have gone.
But he's been in the club since he was six. There's a lot of.
He didn't want to get booed.
But he did play well, and I don't think he's right for Liverpool, is he? You know, even the fact he plays in a wing-back system with Forrest sort of says that they don't find him in there. But you're right. I mean, I suppose the possible joker in the pack is Calvin Ramsey, isn't he? You know, if you can get him sort of, you can have a good look at him in pre-season, see if you can get him up to speed. I mean, he looked, in the very, very brief cameos that I've seen with him in the first, he looked like he's got a good bit of sort of defensive desire about him, doesn't he? That he likes to get stuck in. So, you know, maybe he can be someone who can make a difference to the squad, certainly in the next 12 months.
One thing, my final point on the whole Trent thing, I do think that the reason we seem to be playing it a lot now is maybe just to get game reps. I think it's one of those things, we're not going to be seeing it all the time, but we are new to it. So as much information we can get about it, that, like I was saying before, other teams game planning around it, all those kind of things. So maybe it's going to be a couple of times we think, well, we don't need to do it here. Maybe it's just getting them all used to it. For Trent himself, it's definitely reinvigorated him, because the thing that we forget, you were saying before, Ian, about the high line and the risk reward, and he's been the black spot in our plan for about 3 years, teams have been like, there's space behind Trent. Get after him, get after him, get after him. He's had to deal with that every game, turning up thinking, okay, how many guys are going to be running at me today? And then suddenly it's like, okay, you don't have to worry about that so much. We want you to concentrate on the things you're doing that way. And that's just a bit of a load off. And so he's kind of taking to it with some gusto. I think the big thing about him when he really cracks it is the space, because that's the one thing he gets of right back. When you're thinking about all of the brilliant passes he plays, he's normally in space to play those passes. He's not going to get that much space in central midfield. So once he gets a better understanding of using space, able to play those killer balls without having a lot of space around him, that's going to be the key.
It's interesting because you're right. I mean, he has got some, he could say, couldn't he? If you look at the PFA Player of the Year shortlist this year, I think four of them will probably be left-sided forward. You know, you probably have Matoma, you probably have Martinelli, Rashford, Grealish, possibly. Yeah. You know, that's who he's up against every week. You know, it's like, yeah, I know I'm getting Vinicius Junior, you know, probably, exactly, you know, going to be right up there in Ballon d'Or talk in the years to come. So, yeah, and Ian's right. I mean, I watched the first leg at Real Madrid and thought,
tough night, wasn't it?
I wonder if Trent rung him afterwards and said, I told you, mate. It's not nice, is it?
Fast, Eminem.
Yeah, really quick. Yeah, and it was Rodrigo as well, wasn't it? Done the same to Chalabar, wasn't it? You know, you're just like, yeah, these are quite good players, some of these, you know.
Yeah, Ian, final point on the game before we just pick a team for West Ham. It was a really nice touch for the Nottingham Forest fans to unveil the banner that read "No to Tragedy," chanting solidarity with survivors. Liverpool supporters can and obviously will continue to do all of the work, but there has to be some recognition now that it does have to come from external fan bases and other fan bases, particularly in the Premier League. And it was nice, and you could tell how appreciated it was by the whole of Anfield and also all the Nottingham Forest fans applauding it as well. It was a nice moment, and it was a very moving moment as well, wasn't it?
It was, to be honest. And I think we all knew that was coming. I referenced on a show last week, there was a piece by Daniel Taylor, I think in The Athletic, which talked about the complicated history that the two clubs have had, especially since 1989 as well. But you could go back a little bit further when they were rivals, direct rivals, both abroad and kind of domestically for the biggest honours as well. And I think even last season, and I think it was mentioned in the article, you know, one of the Forest fans, can't quite remember his name, might have been Pete Hillier or something like that. He was at the heart of driving some of this forward in terms of the banner. I think he'd said, you know, the year before, he'd actually gone down some of the roads and lampposts that were kind of leading up to the ground that where Liverpool fans were going to enter, and he'd had to take down kind of Hillsborough slurs and stuff. So there was a clear problem there, even going back to last season, which some Forest fans had recognised and thought, well, hang on a sec, we've got to police this ourselves. We're going to solve some of this. We've got to deal with it ourselves. And I think that's what plays out. You know, you've got a group of Forest fans there who've taken it upon themselves to understand that what's been going on isn't right. It's not right at all. And, you know, you want other fans and other clubs to maybe look at that and kind of take some of that on board and see, actually, you know, change can happen. It can happen. And I think, you know, the weekend was a really, really strong example where when Forrest kind of unveiled that banner on, 6 minutes, I think you felt it around you, to be honest. It was quite an emotional moment. And I think people who will have been, you know, at Hillsborough, and I listened to Cav talk on the post-match show, and I think it certainly kind of, you know, got him quite emotional. And why wouldn't it? Because it was a great gesture. And again, you know, it's important that it doesn't just end here, that we see this kind of continue now. And you're hoping that, you know, one or two fans of other clubs have looked at that on Match of the Day and thought some of their behaviour has not been acceptable. It's been so below what you'd expect from just on a human decency level, to be honest. It's been so far below that. And I think sometimes it is about education and it is about understanding. And I think sometimes you'll end up singing songs. And I think we've probably all been there at times. And again, the Chelsea Rent Boys song got mentioned on a show where I think people would have sang that in the past and just maybe not really recognised or understood that actually it might upset people, it might impact on people. And I think there'll be an element to that with some of the stuff where we've heard about, you know, always the victims and stuff, where people maybe haven't kind of put two and two together and understood that actually it does relate to this tragedy that happened in 1989. It's not about other things that people have tried to spin it as, you know, stuff about Heysel or other things. We know what it's about. It's about what happened in 1989. So let's not piss about, let's not mess about with it. And I think some of it is about education, maybe just people taking it on board that actually this is people's lives we're talking about here. People lost lives at football matches. People have lost loved ones. And it hurts when you're hearing some of the chants that have been going on. So I thought it was credit to Nottingham Forest. I thought it was. And again, you know, those fans who are behind that deserve massive congratulations for kind of, you know, for making the effort and making it happen. And it was the whole end, wasn't it? The whole end kind of respected it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really good to see.
I think as well, it maybe hammers home a little bit that it's sort of seen as like, you know, there's an element of, oh, upsetting Liverpool fans, but it affects fans of other clubs, doesn't it? We always talk about the minority, don't we? And listen, we've heard it at Anfield. I've heard people singing those songs, and it's not been a minority, or it's not sounded like a minority. It sounded loud enough. But you don't really think about the people who are in there going, oh my God, like, why are you singing? You know,
imagine if I was in
a Liverpool away end and I heard songs, I know I'd be looking around going, are you messing? You know, like, come on, guys. Like, there's a lot of people who feel like that way, aren't there, in the Nottingham Forest end? And especially in the Forest end, you know. I'm sure if Sheffield Wednesday ever get back in there, there'll be a lot of those people as well feeling that, who feel that tragedy themselves. You know, they didn't lose anyone there. They didn't sort of, you count them as survivors, but they weren't in the sort of in the jeopardy. But they must carry that around with them. You know, their fathers, their uncles, their mums, their sisters, their brothers, they carry that around, that guilt, or that knowledge of what's happened. So it's also for them, isn't it? It's also for them to stop embarrassing us, you know, stop making a show of us, and stop bringing back those memories of ours as well. So yeah, it was good to see. I think it's good that tragedy chanting has become a sort of a thing now, hasn't it? You know, and it's in the eye line. It was a great documentary, or a sort of 5-minute thing on the BBC, where there's a guy talking and he's talking about his experience of Hillsborough, and then you don't realise until halfway through that he's a Forest fan. You know, you think it's a Liverpool fan talking. So I think it's good to hammer home that, you know, this is, of course, it's a Liverpool issue, but it's wider than that. You know, it affects, it's just a football fan's issue, really. It's just a human being's issue, really, actually.
Yeah, 100%. It does impact people beyond and above Liverpool, and it was really nice to see other teams getting involved. Change does all start with individuals, of course, and it can happen if education is put in place and the right things are put in place, of course. And it was a really nice starting point. We have put out 10 minutes of the pink that Ian referenced there, because the last 10 minutes was on it, and you do hear from Damien as well, and he's always worth listening to on absolutely anything, but particularly on this subject. So do go and listen to that if you have a chance. It's out for free on wherever you get your podcasts. I want to pick a team finally, so let's go through. Mo, you can take defence. Ian, you can go midfield, and Neil, we'll go up front. So give me your defensive lineup for West Ham on Wednesday night.
Oh, goody.
Neil got a sexy one there, didn't he? New fucking midfield defence.
I'm probably not changing the defence. I think all five of them are still the best five at the moment. And yeah, I think maybe there's going to be a lot more concentration on set pieces over the course of the next couple of days. But yeah, I expect them all to be still there in situ.
No changes? What about midfield?
I think there will be changes. I think there has to be changes. I think I'd expect to see Fabinho, given the fact that he's tried to look after him at the weekend. I think Henderson, it might be a game too far for the captain, to be honest. I think you've got to be aware that, you know, he is at an age now where 3 games in 9 or 10 days feels like it might be a little bit too much, in terms of, you know, we know how he likes to get about the pitch and the influence he's had at times on the football team. But I think that is waning a little bit in terms of his ability to get around the pitch. So I wouldn't be surprised to maybe see all of a sudden a Harvey Elliott in there, maybe a Thiago. I take Neil's point, though. Thiago came on and had mad half an hour. I don't know what was going on. But, you know, you put it down to the fact that he has been missing for a while, apart from his cameo at Leeds. But we know he is normally a footballer who looks after the ball far better than he demonstrated at the weekend. So I think, you know, it may well end up being a three like that. But then, you know, you have got to take into account that West Ham's midfield is pretty robust and big and strong. So maybe that might play into maybe looking at someone like keeping Curtis there whilst he's fit. But I do think he struggled a little bit at the weekend. So I think it's a little bit of a tricky one. I think ideally, or I thought personally, that he might not play Henderson against Forest, because I think if you look at those games in isolation, that felt like a game where maybe you could have a bit of wriggle room in terms of your selection, and then you go a bit more robust against West Ham because of the physical threat and presence that they have, certainly with Souček and Rice. Rice suddenly has hit form again, but they choose not to do that. So I think it'll be interesting to see what plays out.
Yeah, Neil, and up front, what are you thinking?
I think same again. I think he likes at the moment what he's getting out of the front three. I know they didn't have a great sort of first half creatively, but I think he'll want Nunes as a sub again. I don't think he's done enough to say that you've got to start me. You know, I think Gakpo was in and out, wasn't he? But I like the way he looks after the ball. I think away from home, especially. I think the fact that he can, his touch is sure, and he, you know, he's one of them who can get you out a little bit, can't he? I think Jota and Nunes are a little bit more hit and miss with their first touch and their hold up play. I think, you know, it'd be nice to see Diaz getting sort of half an hour, 40 minutes. You know, I think he looked sharp, didn't he, when he came on? He looked like he had a, you know, he benefited from that run out at Leeds. So I think we'll see a bit more of him. But yeah, I'll probably go with the same again forward line. I think in midfield, I think Thiago will come back in. I think he'll play Henderson. I think he'll play Fabinho for height and for sort of experience. I think Elliott would be too big a risk given some of the away performances Liverpool have had with him, the lack of physicality they've had. But there's Milner as well, I suppose, isn't there? That you know, hasn't had many minutes really recently. But there's a possibility for that. But I think Thiago will come in and they'll try and sort of take the sting out of West Ham. That it is a place where you can turn it, can't you? You know, Newcastle done it recently, absolutely stuffed them, didn't they? And it looked like Arsenal were going to do the same. So I think there is a possibility that Liverpool can take this thing, but I think it'll be the same front three.
Ian is hosting the pre-match one pretty much straight after this, so you can subscribe and listen to all the variations and things we've just spoken about. Final word to you, Neil, on a couple of players we've been linked with recently. Mostly, Gravenberch has been the one that's been popping up, but I think Thuram was one that's a name that surfaced recently at the end of last week. Who are you kind of hearing about as the most prevalent name at the moment?
Everyone.
Although literally everyone is
everyone
being
everyone under 26 who plays in midfield in any European top flight. Gravenberch is one that it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways, except for Bayern are saying they're not going to sell, so that's probably a pretty big block on that. Obviously there's Mount, there's an update today from David Ornstein about Mount. Chelsea are sort of trying to make some effort to keep him, which was always likely, but remains to be seen. So many, I mean, look, I'm sure there'll be a lot of calls from, I haven't watched Brighton on Sunday for either of those two who play there. I particularly like McAllister, but I think I said that was outrageous on Sunday. He was pretty good, wasn't he? So I think it's just one of them. All of these names are probably in there. You know, I think Liverpool are interested in sort of loads of midfielders, but I think it's a case of what can they do? What's the money situation? Where are they going to divert the funds and who can they get out of certain clubs? I think there's some you can sort of look at and say, that price is probably going to be too high. I think I say that was probably one of those. I think he's going to be too big a price. I think Declan Rice would be one of those that you'd look at and say, I don't think Liverpool would pay what West Ham would want. So I think you're looking at players like Mount, like Gravenberch. I mean, Mateus Nunes was linked. I think that's gone a little bit colder. So I think you can, I don't think there'll be a different name next week. There'll be a different name the week after, and there'll be a lot of names that a lot of agents are putting towards Liverpool because it's clear what they need.
Yeah, Liverpool are monitoring everyone. And one man that is very happy about that is Rob Gutman. He, of course, is hosting a weekly Gutter show. So do subscribe and you can hear all about the transfers and the names we're linked to and the likelihood of them ending up playing at Liverpool next season. Thank you very much to Ian, to Mo, to Neil, to Andy for producing and Sam on the video. That has been the Anfield Wrap for this week. Sports Social Podcast Network.